episode 112 of the Cricket Her Weekly. Now, Sid, we've just got a week to go now until the biggest date in this year's cricketing calendar.
Yeah, the start of the Charlotte Edwards Cup. I'm really excited, Raf. It's next Saturday and it's going to be great.
Is there nothing else happening next Saturday?
Don't think so, is there?
No.
Oh, we're getting married.
We are.
Yay.
It's very exciting. And we're hoping that even though we'll be busy and we won't be able to record a newsy podcast, we will be able to bring you a very special something else episode. So look out for that.
Okay.
Anyway, in the last few days, the Fairbreak tournament has got underway, and we talked about it a little bit in last week's podcast, and we're going to talk about it a bit more in this week's podcast. It's been obviously on free-to-air TV in the UK, so that's been really exciting because we've been able to watch some of the games, obviously kind of juggling it around work and other commitments, but we've been watching it a bit, it's got underway, and there's been some exciting performances. I'm sure that our viewers have been following it themselves, so I won't go through an entire rundown of everything that's happened so far. But Sid, you've been crunching a few numbers.
Yeah, so I've been going through the batting and bowling stats, and it's kind of interesting. The batting is very much dominated by the big name players. So all of the top nine batters are players that, you know, that we've all heard of from the full member nation. So Shamari Attapattu out at the top, who's had a couple of good innings, got Danny Wyatt in there. And you know, they're the kind of players that you'd expect to be there. Yeah. It's really that in the bowling where the associate players have had much more opportunity, actually. So full member nation batters have faced 60% of the balls, whereas full member nation bowlers have only bowled 40% of the balls. So 60% of the balls have been bowled by associate players.
Oh, okay.
So the associate players, you know, getting much more of an opportunity to bowl. I guess this kind of fits in a little bit with the way that the T20 leagues generally work, because what we see a lot in the tournaments like the 100 Kia Super League going back and the WBBL is that if you want to hire an overseas player, you hire a big batter and you put them in up front and you get them to score loads of runs for you. And that's kind of what's happening here as well, which means that in some ways it's fairly typical tournament, but it does mean that there's a lot more opportunities being given to those associate nation bowlers than there is to the batters. And if the purpose of this is to give opportunities to those associate players, I think they need to try and find a way of getting more opportunity for those batters, because otherwise you're going to get more and more things where, especially as people get settled into like the rhythm of the tournament and what the pitch is like out there, and you're going to see more things like we saw yesterday, you know, where, you know, you have like Elise Villani able to just go in and carry her bat through the entire innings without really taking any risks, and kind of almost dominating too much, because that's what we want to see. We want to see more balanced games, I think. So we saw a couple of games in the first week that weren't particularly balanced, you know, because these full member nation batters were able to rack up these huge scores. But you know, let's look at the positives of the tournament. It's been a long time in the making, as we know, that you know, Sean Martin first came up with this idea. You know, we spoke to him like 8 years ago or something when he was first kind of kicking it around, you know, and trying to get this off the ground. It's taken a long time to get there. But you know, they've really made it work, and he's made it work, and it's really been very much his drive that has taken it to where it is, you know. And we've got to a point where, you know, they've hired out a stadium and they've done everything right. They've got commentators, they've got proper TV coverage with, you know, decent camera work, and you know, it's being broadcast all over the world, and we've got our free view option in this country, so you don't have to pay any money. Everybody's got that available to them. It's on channel 64 or 65 depending on what mood your TV in is. It is a bit strange the way that the TV channels work in this country. I know it's the same elsewhere, but they do seem to move around a bit. Those higher channels, you've got like the BBC channels that are always in a particular place, but the other channels seem to shift a bit
anyway.
But you know, a real positive that we can watch it under those circumstances, and we've had all the games on. They've been a little bit in the background on occasions because obviously we're doing our day jobs, but it's been a nice thing to have on in the background, and I've been enjoying it. So yeah, it's been a good way to pass the time. I think it's important that we put it kind of in the context of these are very much really exhibition matches. I don't think in many ways it's a serious competition that people are particularly worried about winning. You can sort of see the attitude of some of the players where they're much more relaxed than they would be under normal circumstances. They're perhaps playing shots from the off that they wouldn't play from the off if they were playing in a World Cup or whatever. But you know, if you treat it like that, and you treat it as, you know, the women's equivalent of, you know, these exhibition tournaments that you sometimes see, or perhaps the women's equivalent of the Abu Dhabi T10, then, you know, there's a lot to be got out of it.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And they have been a bit mysterious about the prize money, haven't they? I don't think that anyone's said what the prize money is that's up for grabs, or what else they might win. So that's been the kind of interesting one in terms of how, as you say, it's perhaps more of a let's show what we can do rather than we're actually in this to win it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, from the players' perspective, they are getting very well remunerated for this. We've seen figures banded around. We believe some of the players are being paid 15,000, 20,000. We understand that all the players aren't being paid the same. You know, there's obviously some good money for some of the players there.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of...
All of the players are being paid, mm-hmm. we understand. So right down the tree, even though they might be getting a bit less money, everyone is being paid for, you know, their contribution to this whole thing.
Yeah, as you would expect. I just wonder whether, just in terms of the money that's being paid to somebody like Danny Wyatt, who we know has actually been sitting out some of the games and being kind of swapped back and forth for Susie Bates or whoever, purely because they want the teams to have more balance and they don't want one team to be totally dominant. They're kind of trying to manufacture that, aren't they? And actually, you know, is it helpful for them to be paying £15,000 or £20,000 to Danny Wyatt to go out there and not play in the matches when that could be being spent on associate cricket ultimately? I don't want to be too negative, but just find that a little bit problematic. And would it not maybe? I mean, what we're seeing in this tournament is something that we all kind of already knew, which is that there's a huge gulf between standards in associate women's cricket and in full member. Tends to be professional women's cricket. Obviously some of the associate countries do have what we might term kind of professional contracts, but in terms of on the ground, are they actually able to devote the same amount of time? What those professional contracts looks like varies. But obviously it's the full member countries who have got the bulk of the resources. And so, you know, that's the gulf that we would expect to be there. And this tournament is obviously trying to bridge that gap in a way and trying to narrow that gap. And that's a really important and kind of laudable aim. I just sort of found myself questioning whether this tournament is actually doing that or whether it's the best way to do that. Because if you're shelling out £20,000 to have big name players there and sitting on the sideline, and because you've got so many big name players, understand that the big name players are kind of the draw in terms of sponsors and TV coverage and everything like that. Is that actually the best way to spend all of this money that Sean Martin has somehow managed to get from somewhere? Is now kind of seeking to address those gaps with this tournament? You know, would it not? You know, just think about what £20,000 could do in a country like Brazil to grow cricket, women's cricket there. Think about how many professional cricketers you could make in a year in Brazil with that sum of money that's being instead spent on Danny Wyatt flying out to Dubai. Not to pick on her specifically, it's just because she's been one of the players who I've noticed hasn't played in all of the games, and therefore you kind of go, well, was it really necessary for her to be there, perhaps? In terms of the overall tournament, it's great for her personally. And of course, if somebody comes along and says, here's £20,000 to come play in our 2-week tournament, she would be stupid to say, oh no, actually I have to think about the integrity of associate cricket. But just in terms of the bigger picture, I think it's really important that we develop associate cricket. I just wonder about some of the money that's been spent on some of the aspects of this tournament, how whether that could have maybe been invested elsewhere, or, you know, perhaps we could have a tournament where there's only one big star player from a full member nation in each of the teams even. And then that would mean that you're spending a lot less money on getting those players out there, but you have still got that attention of, you know, the people who are kind of pre-existing full member fans, I suppose.
Yeah, and there's, like I said, if you're looking at what's the best thing to do for associate cricket overall, I mean, the best thing that can be done for associate cricket in the women's game is to invest in things like the Under-19 World Cup. And that's coming up, and, you know, the ICC are doing that, and that money is going in there to create a tournament which has a much wider reach in terms of countries than anything that we've seen before. So, you know, and this has some little bit of different aims. And, you know, ultimately, in terms of the long-term aims of Fairbreak, there's still some open questions there. And there's some contradictions as well, which we should acknowledge, right? That if the long-term aim of Fairbreak is to be the best tournament in the world, then ultimately you're not going to get a lot of involvement from, you know, 40-year-old Japanese spinners that spent most of their life playing baseball, because they're just not going to be part of it. Because if it's going to be the best tournament in the world, it's going to be dominated by Australians and New Zealanders and English players and South
Indians.
Africans and Indians.
If they can get them.
And you know, so there's a contradiction there that ultimately they're going to need to resolve. But you know, that doesn't mean that in the short term it wasn't worth doing. And it's shown that it is possible to build these things. It's shown that there is sponsorship money out there to do these things, which the ICC have previously, you know, always gone, oh well, no, we can't find the money for this, sorry guys. This shows that if you have the dedication and the right people in place, there is money to be found from sponsors to do things like this. You know, and that's really shown up actually some of those other boards, I think. So
well, anything that embarrasses the ICC is obviously a good thing. Okay.
Anyway.
So last weekend, we actually got out and about and we watched some live cricket, didn't we? I think I'd billed it in last week's podcast as the biggest rivalry in global cricket. We went to see Kent v Sussex and it was a great day, wasn't it, Sid?
Yeah, Kent lost two T20 matches, the first
T20
matches.
That's not why it was a great day. That makes me sound really anti-Kent. It was a great day and Kent lost both their games.
But it was the first T20 matches that Kent have lost since before the pandemic. They've lost a couple of one-day matches in like the London Championship and things. But, you know, Kent a little bit brought down. Didn't have all their top players, though, did they, Raf? Well, they had Grace Scrivens, of course.
Of course.
And, you know, she had a really good day. So she got like 30-odd in the first game. She was the captain for the day. Still only like 18 years old. So, you know, still, you know, young, but you know, she looked very comfortable in that role. She looked to be, you know, directing things, you know, with the maturity that belies her years, really.
Yeah.
And then she came out in the second game and, you know, really smashed it.
Yeah.
And that's really what we want to see of the top players in this competition, because they should be smashing it in those kind of circumstances. And she was playing shots all over the ground. You know, she wasn't just smashing every ball over cow corner and, you know, taking advantage of, you know, rubbish bowling. You know, the shots all over the place. And she was playing a lot of shots that went over the ring. She didn't see one six, perhaps. There certainly weren't a lot of sixes. But, you know, it was a fantastic performance and the kind of thing that, you know, we hope that she's going to be able to bring into the more senior domestic cricket she's going to be playing later in the year. I want to mention one other player that I was really impressed by as well before we get onto other things about that day, which is Lexa Stonehouse. She only played in one of the games, didn't take any wickets, but I thought that left arm fast bowler, she seemed to be bowling reasonably rapidly, you know, a bit above classic medium pace, certainly for that level. And she's got a contract in the 100. She played one game last year in regionals.
Right.
So, you know, she's not quite a complete debutante, but, you know, she's got a contract in the 100 with the Trent Rockets. Definitely one to look out for a bit longer term. That's the joy of watching county cricket for me, that you see these players and, you know, sometimes nothing comes of them. Sometimes you see a player, you know, where I was talking last weekend about a player that played for Kent like 3 or 4 years ago, a young girl called Chelsea Rosen, who, you know, has disappeared off the face of the earth and, you know, obviously not doing cricket anymore at that level. And she looked really promising. So not all of those players wind up developing, but when they do, it's really exciting to see them come through. So look out for Alexa Stonehouse.
Yeah, and obviously today is the County T20 Cup Finals day, so there'll be matches going on even as we record this podcast, and they'll be getting underway. So that's exciting.
Yeah, we're not going to be there because we're isolating ahead of the big day next Saturday. But we'll obviously be following as much as we can and we'll look out for any live streams as well.
Yeah, what I was going to say was, though, that I think it's a little bit disappointing, given that it's finals day today and obviously some of these county matches do hold a great deal of importance for those who are involved in the county setup. It's disappointing, therefore, to see that it looks like some of the regions are withdrawing and withholding their players from playing in these county matches. There was some stuff about, for example, George Adams didn't play for Sussex last weekend, and of course you've mentioned that Kent were without any of their professional players because they were withdrawn by the Stars, as we understand it, for workload reasons. Now, to me, given the stage of the season that we're at and given the amount of cricket that there is, that seems a bit silly. And it's also disappointing to see that regions seem to consider that, you know, what we would think of as fairly meaningless inter-regional warm-up matches are being prioritised for players to play in over genuinely competitive county cricket. I think that that is partly the fault of the ECB because of the way that they have treated county cricket, and in particular the T20 Cup has been set up in such a strange way that you go, okay, well maybe some of the regions are going, you know, if you're Sunrisers, well, why would we get our players to play for Middlesex against like Huntingdonshire when they're clearly going to thrash them? And is that going to be particularly helpful? So there's a question about the way that the County T20 Cup has been set up, but I still think it's quite disappointing that in that most competitive group that we see that's got Kent and Sussex and Hampshire and Surrey in, all kind of, you know, your traditional Division 1 counties, Hampshire obviously latterly so, that the regions don't consider that to be a really important kind of warm-up for regionals. And why is that any less when it's a match situation, a genuine match situation, surely that's better for your players' development. It just seemed a lose-lose thing to withdraw those players. And I understand that a lot of them won't be playing today, even though it is finals day, and that's really disappointing.
Yeah, and ultimately we need to remember who funds this as well, right? I mean, you know, what's the answer to that question? Who is going to be funding county cricket going forwards?
Yeah.
Well, it's the counties. And will the counties, you know, want to continue to fund, you know, it, if it's made into so much of a competition where they can't play, you know, their big names, and therefore, you know, they feel they can't advertise it in the way that they might do if they had, you know, the Tammy Beaumonts available for Kent and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, but there's still a lot to enjoy about, you know, what we've got in county cricket. And, you know, we've got some trophies being handed out today, and look forward to finding out who wins them.
I don't know if there are actually any trophies being handed out, because I believe that Kent bought their own trophy last year.
Well, Kent will be handing out a trophy to themselves.
But I don't know if the ECB provides any trophies or if there are any knocking around. But, like, metaphorical trophies.
Okay.
Now, finally this week, there's been an exciting new appointment announced by the ECB. Richard Bedbrook is going to become the new England Women Head of Performance Pathways. So that means that he'll oversee the England Women's A and Under 19 programmes to help develop players ultimately for international cricket. So that's quite exciting. And obviously, Bedbrook's been involved in women's cricket for a very long time, hasn't he, Sid?
Yeah, he came up through the ranks at Surrey, so he's a player that's been coaching since he was quite young. He was never a big professional cricketer, was he? He never quite made it as a professional cricketer himself, but got into coaching. Started coaching in the Surrey women's setup.
Yeah,
came through into the Super League, ended up, you know, one of the key figures across the whole game, and it's really important to. I think it's a really important role, and he's a really good appointment for that role, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. So he was when Surrey were the kind of pioneering county, they appointed him as a full-time coach of the women's county team before, you know, the regional system was, you know, even a twinkle in Claire Connor's eye. He was already a full-time professional coach in women's domestic cricket, I think it's a brilliant appointment. I think he's a great example of a coach who treats women's cricket with respect and very seriously, and isn't and has never tried to use it as a stepping stone into coaching in men's cricket. And those are the coaches who I've got the most respect for, and obviously that prioritisation and his commitment to women's cricket has now been recognised by the ECB, so I think it's brilliant. And the players at Surrey and at Stars haven't got a bad word to say about him. They all think he's wonderful, because he works really hard and he is really committed. And he's it's been interesting because he took on the regional director role at Stars. And I think we did talk about this at the time on the podcast, that actually that was a bit more maybe of a hands-off role than he was used to doing, because he's so good working one-on-one with the players and actually kind of developing them in that coaching way. And the regional director role is more of a, is partly an admin role.
It's a management role.
Yeah, management, that's a better way of putting it. Rather than like a pure coaching role. So it's possible that perhaps he's kind of decided to take on this job because it is going to be much more of a kind of pure coaching role, and really exciting opportunities to work with those players in that kind of very sort of direct way. And obviously, you know, one of the really exciting things about it, I think that this is actually a new role within the ECB. I did have a look around and I couldn't see that other people had held it. There's obviously, in the past, they've had an England Academy head coach, and they've had people kind of working specifically within the pathways, but they've not actually had this role before, I don't think. And I think one of the big reasons for creating it is with a view to that under 19 World Cup next year, going, okay, we need somebody who's full time working with that age group of players to develop that team, and he's going to be brilliant at that.
Yeah, and someone who's got a long-term perspective as well, that he's somebody that, you know, built up things longer term at Surrey.
Yeah.
And you know, him and, you know, Ebony Rainford-Brent working kind of together in, you know, as kind of the figureheads of that women's system at Surrey,
yeah,
they were trying to build something long-term, something of like a dynasty, if you like. And that's ultimately what we need. So it's great that there's going to be, you know, an important, respected figure in that role going forwards.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
And it's something that I do hope that, I mean, I guess that the real hope is that the ECB continue this role, and that it isn't just something that leads up to the World Cup, but it carries on,
yeah,
forward, and it's something that is a permanent thing to be, yeah, able to kind of carry on, you know, it's a permanent revolution, right? Always move the next generation,
yeah,
in and
absolutely
give them the best opportunities and know who to send where.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you've got someone powerful that can, for instance, go, you know, I'm going to take this person out of here and put them there, and, you know, I'm going to go to this region, and I'm going to go, I think this person needs to be made captain because, you know, this is someone that we've got our eye on. It's being able to kind of be a big enough figure to actually take those decisions,
yeah,
and go to people and tell people what to do.
That's quite interesting, because you're saying that he's going to have authority over the regional directors.
Well, he'll have he'll have definitely a degree of moral authority to be able to do that. Obviously,
yeah,
you know, there might not be anything, he might not actually have a sort of role where he goes, well, I order you to do this.
He's
not that
person.
Kind of guy, no. But whereas he is the kind of guy that can go, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, you know, not a wink, wink, but nudge, nudge, I think that, you know, we're looking at this person maybe being England captain in 10 years' time. Can you look to make this person vice captain next year, and then maybe captain the year afterwards of your original,
yeah,
team?
I think what you're saying is that the hope is that this role is the start of the ECB having a more holistic approach to women's cricket, whereby the head coach of the England team works with Richard Bedbrook in this new role, and then also works with the regional directors and coaches, and that it all kind of works together to,
yeah,
produce players. And if we're going to compete with Australia, that's the sort of holistic system that we need, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I'll finish by saying the thing that I tweeted, which is that Surrey's loss is England's gain.